On today's episode of The Good Word, Bomani Jones joins me to discuss the state of the game. We're going to talk about the Nuggets and the Lakers and where do we go with Joel Embiid and the Philadelphia 76ers. All that and much more on today's show. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. A bit of business before we get into the show today. Don't forget we are also on YouTube, so don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us there, as well as wherever you get your audio podcast. It is Monday. My man Bomani Jones is joining us today from The Right Time with Bomani Jones. I was on his show. Go check that out on YouTube as well. My man Bo, what's going on?
Hey, man, you know, always good to do a home at home, brother. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's about that time of year. It's about that time of year. All right after All-Star weekend, right before the playoffs. And I wanted to get you on because I felt like it's kind of a hairy subject to talk about when Pekan Subban opened his mouth and started, you know, went on his day-long crusade against the NBA, saying he hasn't watched the NBA since Kobe Bryant retired, and then had all of these critiques about said NBA and about how the players don't value the fans and don't value each other and everything else. And that's always, Bo, a really tricky situation because the hockey versus NBA thing, it's always weird, just like NFL versus NBA is always a weird thing. It always feels like whenever one of those two sports does something well, it becomes a negative reflection on whatever the NBA is doing, whether the NBA is in good shape or not. I don't understand why that is and where that's come from.
So it's always been a cottage industry to dog the NBA, right? Just generally speaking. And the difference between the NBA and the other leagues in that regard is that the dogging to which we refer from the NBA typically comes from outside the house, right? So baseball, for example, is a very self-critical game. And when it's time to make criticisms of the game, the criticisms tend to come from inside the house, but only inside the house. You did have other people outside, oh, baseball's slow, baseball's boring, but it doesn't come with kind of the vitriol that it often feels like is directed toward the NBA. Hockey is a sport where they are incredibly critical of the people in charge. Gary Bettman's been the commissioner for 30 years, and I don't know a single person that's ever been happy about it except for the ghost of David Stern. But apparently he's doing something right because he's had the job literally as long as I can remember. I struggle to think of who had that job before Gary Bettman had the job. The NFL, I mean, it has become to America what hockey is to Canada. It is the dominant sport that gobbles up everything else. But there has always been a group of people, for whatever reason, and this goes back really to probably the 1970s, at the beginning of the 1980s, that it is a very particular criticism of what is wrong with the NBA. And very often what you hear is wrong with the NBA is the same stuff that people have been saying for 50 years. And that was why the stuff from Subban hit so funny, is that, wow, this sounds like antiquated criticism. They don't play hard, all of these things. And I mean, to be honest, man, it was a little weird to hear a black person sound like that talking about the game. But the thing is, he doesn't sound like a white man. He sounds like a hockey player. And this is how hockey players view the NBA. They view themselves as being the yeoman and all of this stuff. And that the basketball players, who, by the way, make a lot more money than they do, don't work that hard, yeah, 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 all of this stuff. But it's coding that we've heard from decades. This is like nothing he said was new. It just sounded different coming from a person who looked like that.
Yeah, that was the thing that got me, was that it was met with so much general applause, and then they saw what he tweeted a day later, and they was like, oh, wait a minute, we ain't really going to be backing you, because if we back you.
Talking about whether Trump was going to show up to the to the hockey game.
Yes, yes, yes. That started making people feel a little squeamish, right? That was like, okay, if we're backing you and you're backing him, then what does that say about us? Now, the question I have in general is, some criticisms, even if they come from a terrible place, can be valid. It's just that you don't like the person who's saying it, and you don't like necessarily their motivations for saying it, but if Charles Barkley says that, then it hits differently for us because it comes from inside the house. It comes from someone within the culture of basketball.
Yeah, except the way it lands when Charles says it is very much a function of age at this point. Because broadly speaking, yes, a criticism from Charles comes from inside the home, but the young people think it coming from inside the old folks' home. Like there is very much a generational disconnect in how it is that we talk about this. And it's funny because football, for example, I don't think this happens so much now, but if you rewound about 20, 30 years, there was definitely a generational disconnect about the toughness of the game compared to the previous game. And yes, you'll hear people now who talk about football as being flag football and da-da-da, but not so much as an indictment of the people who play it now versus the ones who play it before. I think that a lot of young people hear what comes from Charles Barkley, and I think very important with young people, I don't think have a great, they don't understand who that man is.
Like they
I think they view him as a dude who used to play basketball, like almost like Bob Uecker was in baseball. Like, yes, that's a guy who used to play baseball, except Charles Barkley was a transformative figure in the history of the sport. I don't think his tone and Shaq also, I don't think their tone is always correct in the way that they, you know, talk about this stuff. But and also, I think it's a fair criticism to say whether or not they should get on that broadcast and just bang on the product that they are ostensibly there to highlight. I think all of those questions are fair and correct. But I do think that there are fair criticisms of the current state of the NBA that come from inside the house. And I think it has become very easy in the way that social media has helped condition us in the way that we communicate to just be dismissive of any criticism and assume that the criticism is coming from an insincere place. To give an example, I was on the internet this weekend and I made the point that for me, the most frustrating thing about the conversation is that the immediate response is to question the motives of the person on the other side. And I'm like, yeah, there are some people where that's fair to do, but you can't do that with everybody. And I did not get a single response saying, hey, I see where you're coming from. People were hitting me right back with, no, this is why I'm going to impugn the motives of whoever it is that says these things. And I'm like, you're doing the exact same thing I said. Damn, I didn't even realize that's what it is. Like, not everybody is. Some people are doing this because they love the NBA.
Right.
Not because they hate it. You can tell pretty quickly who the people are that hate it. But if you decide that by definition, making a criticism of this league is a sign that you actually hate it and don't really care about it, then this thing is like all of it is broken in terms of how we talk about it.
Yeah, look, there's the James Baldwin quote. I love America more than any other place in the world. Therefore, I reserve the right to criticize it perpetually. Or I butchered that in some way, but.
Yeah, but no, you're right.
But I'm one of those people that I'm like, look, I'm not forever living in the crates. I understand evolution and where the game goes. Like Adam Silver said something during his State of the Game press conference at All-Star Weekend. And he said something bold along the fact of, you know, 7-footers have to be able to shoot now. Like you cannot be a 7-footer in the game and you cannot have the ability to shoot a 3-point. I'm like, Adam, that's not a good thing. Like you should, like, even if that's true, that's not something that I would tout as positive evolution of the game. That made me cringe when I heard it. Like, I understood what he was trying to say. Like, he's trying to view it in the way of, you know, it's not just a big man or a little man. It's like everybody has to be able to do everything on the floor. But there's things that you miss within that. I think when people hear Adam say certain things, it's almost like he's missing. Like, how do I put this? There's things that Adam says that on paper, they sound fine. But when he says it and when he delivers it, it's almost like, man, are you missing the texture of what this game was built on for 40 or 50 years before it got to this point? And I think people who are criticizing the game from a good place have seen the evolution and don't want sort of that rich texture to be forgotten about in a haze of 25 to 30 foot three-pointers.
Yeah, so I think he's making an argument. I was talking to somebody about this over the weekend. I can't remember who it was, and I'll probably make this point on my podcast again, so those who listen to both, my bad. I can't just come up with a new outfit every time I go outside. But it's an argument of a society that's kind of run by the technology. And so this is what I mean when I say that. The technology of making movies now is better than it has ever been. And so you can take it to the era of the comic book movies, and I don't watch a lot of them, right? In fact, I don't really watch any of them. So I'm not the person to criticize those movies. I ask this more rhetorically, and even if you don't fully agree with me, I think you'll get what my point is. Stunts and CGI and all of that stuff's come around. Like, special effects are more realistic than they have ever been in movies. Does that necessarily make the movie better? Right. Just because it looks more real, right? Does it make it more resonant? Does it make it feel like more to you just because it looks more realistic, right? So take whatever comic book movie is just coming out or whatever it is, and you can point to all the technology that's gone into it that makes it a clear evolutionary step beyond what came out, call it 40 years ago, okay? Is that movie better than Die Hard?
Right.
You see what I mean? Like, yes. Is it? And you might think it is. That's fine. I'm not saying, but you get the point that I'm making, is that what Die Hard was or what it could be or everything else didn't necessarily require all this technology that's gone into it. So what has happened with the basketball player is evolutionary steps have taken basketball players to places that they were not before, right? Now, if Wilt Chamberlain played in this era, do I think that Wilt Chamberlain would be shooting jump shots and the likes? Yes. Yes, I do. If Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Hakeem Olajuwon, if they played in this era, do I think that they could extend their games out farther? Like, do I think that Hakeem Olajuwon would basically be what you hope Anthony Davis would be? Yes. A 6'9", 6'10", face-up power forward who could anchor inside and all of this other stuff. You go watch Olajuwon, like Jordan said, this Olajuwon's a guard. And you didn't really think about it so much in that time. But would he be that guy? Yes. Would I enjoy watching that more than I enjoy watching the Dream Shake? No. I would not enjoy that as much. And so there was somebody, I think it was Ben Dietrich, who's I think he works for the New York Times. At least he did when I had met him. And I saw him once tweet, and he's not the only person to say this. I just remember seeing it once for him. And his point was, I look forward to watching people try to make the argument that basketball was better when the players weren't as good. And I'm like, that's not nearly as difficult of an argument.
Right.
As you think it is to make. It is a stylistic argument as much as anything else. But no. That's not that hard. Like, hey, man. Whether you think we should or not, we look back fondly on dudes like Charles Oakley. If you mm-hmm. want to go a generation before that, Maurice Lucas. Mm-hmm. There's a handful of those cats. Like, there was a value to their presence, right? There's a value to the idea that this game is not just simply about the high level of execution, but also a certain grit, right? Like the guys that muscle people around, and that's where their place is. Think about the 1994 New York Knicks, for example, that had literally two good basketball players,
mm-hmm. right? Two.
Patrick Ewing and Anthony Mason. Outside of that, these were not really good basketball players that were on this team. This city I live in loves that team. And you yep. are right. They could not survive playing today's basketball. And that style of basketball went too far, and there eventually had to be a correction to make it more watchable. But that don't mean they didn't bring something that resonated with the people who watched the game. And so that's why I say that these arguments are kind of like a tech argument, where it's like, look at all the things that we can do, da-da-da, everything else. But it didn't necessarily make the game better. And the game is what it makes the people feel to me more than anything else. And I am of the belief, and I realize I've been talking for a long time straight.
No, you got it. You got it.
But I am of the belief that, and this is from somebody who makes stuff to sell to audiences. The audience is never wrong. The audience is not always right, but the audience is never wrong. And right now, the audience seems to be saying, hey, man, this ain't really it for us. And it blows my mind to why so many people dismiss that, because a lot of those criticisms are coming from inside the house. Whether I'm with you. I don't think it's that cool to watch 7-footers shoot 3-pointers. I would rather watch 7-footers work in the block. That's me.
I don't think it's that hard to see. Like, a 7-footer shooting 3-pointers. Now, mind y'all, I grew up in Detroit, Well, I saw a 7-foot white dude named Lambeer land his ass out there and shoot threes because he had no business being in the post. But that was the novelty of it, being a stretch five. Jack Sigma, same sort of thing with that funky release and all that type of stuff. Totally get it. We have confused efficiency. Like, efficiency is the enemy of good, in my opinion. Like, there becomes a point where everything, like, we judge efficiency, and you know, hear Bo and I talk a lot of times about, like, win shares per 48 minutes and stuff like that. That's a measure and a mark of, like, overall efficiency. But when efficiency becomes the measuring point, to me, you lose so many other different things. That's why you see players not taking shots at the end of quarters. That's why you see players not taking shots at the end of the shot clock, because they would rather take the turnover than they would take the miss and
the
everything else that comes with that. And I think the game is not meant to be played that way. And subsequently, I don't watch basketball. I didn't grow up watching basketball. I didn't grow up playing basketball for like some aesthetic perfection. I played it because I was competitive as all hell and I wanted to beat you by any means necessary. So when I'm watching the game, Bo, I saw like a 140 to 146 game in regulation yesterday in Atlanta. I don't want to see that. Give me a 107, 105 game and I'll be just as happy.
Yeah, and look, and there was an era where you would get those games, right? Like the 1980s were games in the 100s, the 110s, like the 120s. These were not irregular things. Like, I'm trying to remember which. It was the 87 finals, I want to say, where in game six was the only game in the series where the Celtics came in under 100 points or something like that. So I don't think what a lot of us are talking about is not necessarily saying it's not we want fewer points by definition.
Right.
What I think has happened, and I saw somebody sent me a link to this yesterday. I didn't get to check it out, but they used a term that I want to use. I want to make sure people know I'm not boosting this from somebody that didn't invent it. I just ain't watched the video where it came from. But the question is whether or not this is a game that has been solved. And this happens periodically from game to game, to sport, where the game does, in fact, get solved. And so we saw this happen 80s, early 90s, where I think in large part the game was solved. With the rules for illegal defense, or the rules for illegal defense were back in the day, was such that, okay, so if a player is standing outside the three-point line, the person defending him had to be above the free throw line. If he's like in between the three-point line and the free throw line, that person had to be above the bottom of the circle, so forth and so on. It was all these very technical things that were intended to prevent a team from playing zone defense, right? That was the point. After a while, that stuff got solved. And what you saw a lot of was put three dudes on one side of the floor, put one dude on the other wing, one guy in the post, and then you created a by-rule isolation that made a lot of those dudes unguardable. And in order to defend them, you had to come from a double team, rather. You had to come from all the way over there to get over, and then the rotation starts and everything else. And that game got solved. And so the solution that the players came up with, or really Pat Riley came up with to solve this, because it was a game that allowed for greater physicality, is we're going to maul people. That was the solve for the game. What you wound up with was a lot of games, including in the playoffs with great teams, where teams are scoring 53, 54, 55 points in the NBA Finals.
Yeah.
Okay. When you start talking about those point totals that Jordan was putting up, Jordan was having games where he's putting up 35 and the team is scoring 76, right? Nobody's saying that we want to go back to a time of 72, 68 games.
No,
at least I'm not saying that. That's not what I'm going for. But at those points, the game had been solved. And so once the game had gotten solved, they changed it again. And this is when we're like, okay, we're going to allow you to use some zone principles, but we can't let you muscle people like that anymore. Because if you can play zone and you can muscle people, then we're going to have the same problem that we had now. But it had to be done to increase some level of scoring. Then somebody finally came around. There was a lag between the implementation of the three-point shot and people truly appreciating the magnitude of it. And we get to where we've been basically for the last 10 years, which is three-point shooting rates unlike anything any of us could have possibly imagined when we were kids, right?
Mm-hmm,
Watching teams on fast breaks get to the basket and stop to throw it out to somebody shooting a three-pointer, right? A three-on-two break with a three. at the top of the break. On a 4-on-1 or a 4-on-2, that shot has always made sense. On a 3-on-2, it's kind of like, hey, what are we doing? Because the game's been solved. People have figured out the math, and the math says to keep shooting all these shots. It's not the most aesthetically pleasant product, because that also means a lot more missed shots, right? It also means a lot less physicality inside, behind rebounding. There is no person in the NBA right now who is famous or known for being a great rebounder. The triple-double became useless because the rebound became about long rebounds. Like, I don't know who leads the NBA in rebounds right now, to be perfectly honest. Right?
I think it's Sabonis.
And so,
I think it's Sabonis. Yeah, no, the modest Sabonis. That checks out. Right.
Yeah, that sounds cool. Way to go, Doma. You know what I'm saying? That there we go. But I think it's a game that's been solved. And so what normally happens when the game's been solved, as we talked about before, is you make a change to work around the fact that the game's been solved. What I find so shocking is the resistance to the idea of making a change when now is the time to do that. Like, you look through the history of the NBA.
This is when it's supposed to happen.
15, 20 years, you change it up. Baseball has done this in a lot of ways, like lowering the pitcher's mound in 1968, for example, is a change of that. Going from big cavernous ballparks to smaller ones is an example, right? Right now, they're going through a thing where all these guys are just trying to mash home runs. And so we've seen other changes that have happened in the game to try to work around these facts. It's a game that's been solved. So work with it.
Yeah, there's something. And Bo, you know, this is not a back in my day thing, but as a guard, when you're playing pickup and you're the smallest dude out there, it was a business decision to go down the lane and to try something on one of them dudes. It was a mark of your manhood, even if you wasn't yet a man, right?
Yeah.
Like, they would tell you, you bring your little ass down here, you're going to get hit. And you can't punk out. And it became a strategy. And of course, you got to see that in the league with the Knicks and some of the, you know, some of these other teams where they small forwards look like centers. You know what I mean? Like, that became a mark of things. I miss that element of, hey man, you coming down the lane, you better pack something with you. I miss that element of general toughness and competitiveness that came with that. And now there's no real business decisions having to be made. Now it's just, it's ballet. It's beautiful to watch and everything else, but I ain't come to watch that. I come to watch a mix of toughness and skill and shooting and strategy. And like you said, not even Pat Riley, when Tom Thibodeau said, oh, we're going to ice one side of the floor, icing mean we're going to, if it's a side pick and roll, we're going to hedge it to the baseline because there's one shooter on the floor and I got one help defender that's going to cover all this space for that one shooter. Once teams put two shooters on the floor, Bo, you can't play that defense anymore.
Right.
That's why you see the Knicks playing the way that they play, because you can't ice down one side and Tom doesn't have the personnel to play that level of defense. That's why the Knicks are as bad as they are. It's antiquated. But it's time for the game to change. 2004, going into the 05 season, they removed a lot of the hand checking and everything else. What happens? Steve Nash wins MVP, right? The 94 finals happens. Go ahead.
You can look at Steve Nash basketball reference page and you can immediately tell when the rules changed.
Mm-hmm. That quick. He went from Dallas to Phoenix, or went from Dallas back to Phoenix. He had been in Phoenix before, and they opened up that offense and boom, it was just like that. And remember, he was playing with Dirk and with Michael Finley. He was playing with some offensive engines in Dallas and was not that level of offensive player, because they opened the game up in such a vast way that enabled him to win two MVPs, Bo, that I think he earned. I know everybody likes to have their thoughts on him. I'm not disputing the value of those MVPs. I don't think it's fake or phony or none of that. I think it was very reflective of the time that the NBA was in, and I think it was a great signal. And now it's 20 years later, and if the last turn was, what, 2015 or 2016, maybe not the first Warriors championship, but the 73-win Warriors team that decided to just go all in on the three-point shot and everybody has followed, it's 10 years from that point. It's time. It's whether it's moving the line back, eliminating the corner three, allowing for full-on line play at 25 feet out, beat them up. It's time for something to change. And I don't know if the league is ready for that, because unfortunately, Bo, I think the league is too busy chasing what the international game looks like.
Okay, so I'm going to throw something out here at you.
Okay.
In 2016, the year the Warriors won 73 games, the Warriors shot 31 three-pointers per game, 31.6 three-point attempts per game in that season. How many three-pointers a game do you think the Warriors shoot now?
Oh, more like 45.
42 and a half.
Yeah.
42 and a half. And by the way, that puts them at third in the NBA in three-point attempts per game. Third. They were first in the league with 31. Like, there has been an explosion in how many three-pointers teams shoot. That has changed. To me, that is something that the leagues need to legislate and dial back. But I want to get to what you said about toughness, which I think is interesting. And I think that this is kind of an across-the-board thing in not all the sports, I guess, but football. This is it. Football, they legislated out like the thumper safety, right? The guy whose job it is to make you not want to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
That doesn't really exist anymore. Like, safety has become much more of an executing position in large part because it's impossible to be that guy and not get 15 yards every time. They've changed the rules. It's understandable why they do. But I say that to say we are now growing up with a generation of football fans who do not have a single wide receiver that they look at whose bag was, I go over the middle and make hard catches, right? There is no Michael Irvin where right. this is what I do. This is what makes me legendary. This is what makes me the thing is that it's going to really suck and I'm going to go do this anyway, right?
Right.
There is nobody I can think of in the NBA whose job it is to be tough. Whether that be on offense or on defense, there's nobody I can think of off the top of my head whose job it is to be tough.
Not that toughness isn't a part of the attributes, but the thing you think of is tough.
Yeah, it's not why you hear. So even take a guy like Draymond Green, who is as close to that archetype as one could ask a player to be, which is in part because there ain't that much stuff he's good at except for being good at basketball. It's hard to explain. Like, I'm not saying Draymond's not good, but I think you understand.
Yes.
Like, you got, what's the thing we're pointing to? It's not size. It's not some particular level of skill, but he get it done. But we don't think about it from the standpoint of this is toughness as an offensive thing, not just a defensive thing, right? Like, not just toughness is your ability to impose will, not just is your ability to withstand. That is a variable that's kind of been removed from the game. I liked it better when that was a thing because I think fundamentally people don't so much want to watch an execution battle as much as that kind of test of will. See, that's where the hockey players got an argument on people all the time. There's no way to get away from the toughness of that game. To be truthful, the NFL, there's not a lot of ways to get away from the toughness of that one also. Basketball decided to take that out and make it entirely a game of skill and execution. And that, to me, is a game that lacks.
I think the NBA, and I said this on your podcast last week, the NBA is like chasing a moving target. Like, that's the one thing I will give the NBA a lot of grace and sympathy on. What the fan wants changes, like, year to year, every 4 or 5 years. So you're constantly trying to stay ahead. You can never, like, sit in a place of, okay, this is where the game is and we're happy where the game is. Because the numbers and the metrics and what the audience says they want changes based off of who the best players are and what they want to see the best players do. Or maybe what they don't want to see the best players do. So the NBA has to constantly, Adam Silver has to do a job in a way that David Stern probably never had to. And sometimes he and his people are going to get some stuff wrong. And I feel like they've gone a wee bit too far and they don't know necessarily how to move it back without it looking like it's de-evolution, as opposed to sort of just regulating where the game is. So, it's fascinating to consider, Bo.
They also, I agree, though, with the idea. I was talking to somebody about this yesterday, that the league and the way they talk about it, they're not you and I both are devotees to the Tao of Hubie Brown, right?
Yes.
We are Hubie Brown guys. And one thing I appreciate about Hubie is Hubie always found a way to celebrate the modern game while making his criticisms of it, while also very clearly being a person who still sounded like he loves this game. I do think there are a lot of people, I think the Inside Crew is a good example of this. If they could do a better job of highlighting what they like while also adding perhaps what they would like to see more of, I do think that would be helpful for the NBA, because I do agree with the people who make the argument. They got a lot of people in prominent positions out here telling people not to watch. Right? Like telling them this is whack. No. The production meeting, they typically warn you against such a thing, except, I mean,
they don't show up to the production meetings.
Yeah, and even if they did, man, Charles Barkley is going to say whatever it is he feels like saying. But yes. It's not a bad game right now. I wouldn't go that far. It is the most talented that this league has ever been. I do think that a lot of the way, once they started allowing the zone defenses and everything else, it is harder for one player to have the impact that one player used to have. And I don't know if that's a good thing. Like, I think that's something that's a bit overrated. The idea is like, oh, we want a team play. Who asked for that? I didn't. I like watching the coldest be the coldest. Like I had a buddy of mine, my buddy Clarence, he makes a good point about this. He liked the old illegal defense rules. He liked it that you had to come from the other side of the world to double team somebody because you had to guard your man. Like, he really just like the mano a mano.
Sometimes you got to eat that 40.
The game that came from that.
Sometimes you got to eat that 40, Bo.
Yes.
Sometimes a dude send a limo with your name on it and say, get your ass here on time because I'm going to wear you out. And there is nothing you or the rest of your teammates or coaches can do about it. And I like that. Because you hit the man up. You couldn't say, hey, y'all, come help. Like, that was a mark of, I won't say weakness per se, but it's like, hey, man, guard your man. Guard your yard. What happened to that?
Can you imagine? Do you know how much Kawhi Leonard wishes that he played back then?
Why don't y'all just stay in front of your man like same job as him?
Yeah, why don't you guard your man like me? You guys are making this so complex. It seems so very, very simple to me.
Speaking of singular forces, I got a question to ask Bo on the other side about something I saw Saturday night. Back here on The Good Word with Bo Monty Jones. Bo, Saturday night, Lakers Nuggets. I've never seen Nikola Jokic look swarmed like that. Like, everything was contested. The Lakers didn't appeal to him with size. They just appealed to him with length and covering up passing lanes and everything else. Is that a mark of the Nuggets not being as good as we thought they were? Because I told someone Saturday afternoon, the Nuggets are going to the NBA Finals, or at least the Conference Finals. Is that a mark of the Nuggets not being as good as I thought? Or does this mean that the Lakers have legit found something in the last month of the season on the defensive end, even adding Luka Doncic and getting rid of Anthony Davis?
Well, let's see, because it's hard for me to believe that whatever you found on defense is the same thing when you switch out Luka Doncic for Anthony Davis, right? Like, I don't feel like you can keep doing the same thing that you was doing with switching those. If those two dudes are interchangeable, boy, Anthony Davis owes some people some money. He has been stealing, if that's the case. What I wonder about, though, as we have watched Denver largely own the Lakers over the last couple of years, if this is a matter of the Lakers have made a significant alteration to what their team is, and this is the first time that Denver is seeing it. So you have that change, plus you add to it that JJ got something going. Like, JJ as coach, I don't know how long he's going to be able to do this because he's going to be fried very, very soon. But his ability to do the job and cook stuff up, he seems to be just fine at doing that. And it looks like he may have cooked something up. But I ask you this. Let's say that was game one of a 7-game series. And we started saying the things that you said right then. we would both get on TV if they asked us about it and say the same thing. Hey, it's one game. Now it's time for Mike Malone to make the adjustment, right? Now is that time for him, in theory, right, to make the adjustment. That Denver thing is just a little weird because Mike seemed tired of them being the bosses. The boss seemed tired of him. And if his players were tired of him, I wouldn't be surprised either, because I imagine getting tired of Mike Malone ain't that difficult.
It almost feels like you're saying a first round exit is more likely than a run to the finals.
Oh, but I'm not.
Okay.
See, that's
okay,
the thing.
Okay.
I think what happened was we just saw them lose a game to a team with a coach for whom, look, at this point, beating the Nuggets meant a lot more to the Lakers than beating the Lakers meant to the Nuggets, because the Nuggets have been their true, real, live nemesis.
Yes.
You know, at this point, right?
Yes.
But looking at it right now, if the season ended today, the Nuggets would play the Clippers in the first round. No, I do not think the Clippers are going to beat them in the first round. If it turned into Lakers Nuggets 4-5, I still don't know what exactly the Luka, LeBron, that whole team combination is going to look like. I don't know. Right?
Yeah.
But I'm not there yet for them. I don't feel like let me tell you something. If JJ can turn them into a very good defensive team with the pieces that they have right now, wow, he should have been coaching 15 years ago.
Look, I'm looking at the numbers now, and this is just from February 1st. This is the day that they played the Knicks, and we all knew what happened after that, all hell breaking loose. That was without, so basically anything without Anthony Davis in these 9 games, and keep in mind, small sample size, holding teams to 43% from the field, rather. That's first in that stretch, or second in that stretch behind the Brooklyn Nets. Holding teams to 33 from three. That's a pretty good number for perimeter defense. If you're holding teams to 33%, that's critical. Point differential plus 10 points a game. Now, granted, you played Charlotte, who you lost to. You played the Utah Jazz 2 times, who you've lost to. And then you play these other teams that have different iterations. Remember, they played Golden State in that TNT game. They were blowing them out. Then Golden State came back, and it was pretty much academic. Like, it's hard to figure out if this is very sustainable or if this is a matter of, oh, this new team has gotten together. LeBron has found this sort of life, this energy life force that he tends to find right around the playoffs, right before the playoffs. I don't know if all this is sustainable, not just for the next month, Bo, but for 1 playoff round, 2 playoff round, 3 playoff rounds. Like, it's not just each individual thing. It's a culmination of it. It's the stamina that goes into this, the concentration that goes into this. I don't know if I see the Lakers doing that, but I'm impressed with what they've done so far.
Yes, I think that is maybe the best way to put it. And I think for me, the thing that's most recently in my head is losing to Charlotte, which was just kind of a yikes, right? Because you're right, I will say this, this run of teams since the trade, it has been a very interesting mix of what the NBA is. Because you're right, it's 2 games against the Jazz. They got to play the Hornets. They got to play the Trailblazers. But they also beat the Warriors. They also beat the Nuggets. They also beat the Clippers. They also beat the Knicks. And the Knicks are a weird situation right now. The question I ask you, as somebody who knows more about these things than I do, is this regular season defense, or is this a defense that's going to carry to the playoffs? And I ask that because what the Hornets did down the stretch against them was they just hunted Luka Doncic over and over and over again. Like, the problem that the Knicks have is they got 2 zeros on defense that you can just hunt every time down the floor. And it just so happens to be their 2 best offensive players.
Yep.
But you can go hunt those dudes every time down the floor. I can't blame Mikal Bridges or nobody else, but so much. It doesn't change the fact that Karl Towns don't guard nobody. It don't change the fact that Jalen Brunson don't guard nobody, right? These are intractable circumstances. What can they do to stop Luka from being hunted all the time? And as the playoffs go on and there's more wear and tear, how much do teams hunt LeBron?
That's the other thing. You can't have 2 guys that you're going to hunt. Now, it's easier to hide LeBron because, A, he doesn't play at the point of attack, and he doesn't play at the rim, right?
Yes.
Like, when you're talking about the Knicks, you can't hide Towns and you can't hide Jalen Brunson because one guy's at the point of attack and one guy's supposed to defend the rim. And if you got two of those guys, if you got problems with both of those positions, that's where you've got problems. That's why I'm not going to fix my mouth to say this phrase, Nick, Bo, but I'm fixing my mouth to say this phrase. If the New York Knicks and the Detroit Pistons play in the first round of the playoffs, the Knicks going home.
Oh, yeah.
Because if it's two things that team got, they're going to run. They got somebody at the point of attack that's going to punish you. And they've got two dudes at the rim that's going to wear you out. And I don't know if it's a lot of teams that's necessarily built like that and have youth on their side. But the Knicks, to me, that's a problem. Like, that is screaming out, man, we're going to have issues in the playoffs. Even though we're more talented offensively than we've been the last couple of years, we've got monster big holes defensively. And then for the Lakers, you can hunt Luka as long as Luka can give it to you on the other end. Luka can still make you pay, right? And Luka made Denver pay in a way that he hadn't made anybody pay up until this point. And he's always been pretty handsy, right? That contributes to the foul trouble and everything else. But he's also got a really good set of hands, so he can get some steals, he can get in the passing lane, everything else. It's a chance I would not be willing to take for multiple playoff rounds. It's a chance I'm not willing to take if it's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And I'll tell you this, Bo, for whatever reason, it's two things I want to bring up to you, and I want to see where you land on this. A, it's been a really interesting and incredible NBA season so far. Like, we just get so inundated with the nonsense. We get inundated with the Jimmy Butler stuff, inundated with Joel Embiid, who we're going to talk about later, inundated with all the stuff on the outside. I feel like it's been a really good season. And secondly, why does nobody respect the Oklahoma City Thunder? Just because they're young, they got some playoff scars. It's time for them to grow up.
Yeah, for me, the issue with the Thunder was that they were tall but not big. And they went and got Big Lurch from New York.
Yeah, they did.
I think that's like, am I saying that our Isaiah Hartenstein fixes everything? That feels a bit extreme. But I do think that he offers a sturdy presence there, that when it's just what Chet and Jalen Williams, that ain't enough.
Right? 7 foot tall and that's all.
Yeah. Like, that's not enough. Hartenstein gives them an extra element there. And of course, because Chet can take his game inside and out, it becomes helpful. And where Chet's a shot blocker, where Hartenstein is a rim protector, right. You know, those are not necessarily interchangeable terms. Right. So I see where it is that you are coming from, because they do have the scars. But do they have scars, or do they got a scar? Like, I feel like they got a scar. And I think the question that you're asking is a scar enough? The counterpoint is, who are these other teams that's supposed to be better than them? Are you counting on Memphis? Because I'm not.
Nope.
I'm just not. Nope. Denver, I mean, they are champions. They're in their own space. I'm not counting on the Lakers. I don't exactly know what to do with Houston. That's the team I think I have kind of the widest variance of potential outcomes for.
Next year. That's all I'm saying with Houston. Next year.
Well, whenever it gets to the place that they can fully say, and I was when they played the Knicks the other night, once they can fully say, I'm in, Thompson, this is yours. Terrifying sort of situation. You're right. But problems. I also look, but here's something that, but let's look at the play-in teams, okay? Mm-hmm. Minnesota, mm-hmm. who I just don't think has it this year, but this is a team that did go to the Western Conference Finals last year. The Mavericks, the other team they went to the Western Conference Finals against, and it's impossible to say so much about what they are right now because everybody they got that's taller than me is hurt, okay?
Yep.
Golden State, who went and got a real live temperature-changing player, and everything looks different over there since Jimmy showed up.
Yep.
Hey, man, I don't want to see none of them in the first round. And by the way, in all likelihood, only two of them will get there.
I don't want to see Jimmy Butler, a revved up and paid. Not like, oh, I need this to go get my money, but I've got my money and now I can just go play. And these new dudes can see what I'm really all about. In a playoff series, I don't want them problems. I've seen him carry an AC to the NBA Finals without Stephen Curry on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He carried a team that had Max Strus and Gabe Vincent, God bless him, right? No, I'm straight. I don't want them problems. And I think everybody salivated at the thought. Oh, Kevin Durant going to Golden State, that's a nice story. Reunion, he fits right in. Jimmy Butler's a guy who doesn't fit in and therefore is perfect with what they're doing because he is not relying on Stephen Curry or the orbit of Stephen Curry to create shots. He's looking at Stephen Curry and saying, hey, you go spot up somewhere while I go do my thing and I'll find you if I need you.
Yeah, that he doesn't.
Is dangerous.
He is a number one capable player who doesn't have to be your number one. Right? But is going to show up with the presence of a number one type of player. He's going to be there every game. Right? And if the number one skill ain't working, cool. We'll move on to do the other thing. But he's going to be able to give you a contribution however it goes. Like, I don't think they're a championship team. Right. And it's in part, nope, not going to say that. Not going to say that. It never goes well when I say things like that. But I don't think they're a championship team.
It doesn't go well when you say things and I'm on the other side.
No. Neither of us needs to be a party to that. You know what I'm saying? None of us need to be a part of that. But I don't think they're that, but I don't think I want to play them. That's where it comes down to. I don't want to play them.
I think if you are Memphis or Houston, you don't want to play them in the first round of a playoff series.
No.
The problem is you don't know what comes after. Once again, any team can be beat when I'm talking about Lakers or Dallas or Minnesota or Golden State. Any of those teams, I believe, are capable of winning a round with whatever means that they win a round in. And then what happens is that old friend fatigue sets in. Everything else that comes in, and we don't think about fatigue as being like this quantifiable skill. Like, nobody likes to say that. Nobody likes to believe this when I say this. But, yeah, the bad boys got tired. All those years of playoff wars eats on you, and you don't have the energy to get there round after round. Same thing for these old-ass teams here. You ain't got it year after year, round after round. At some point, the atrophy is going to hit.
Well, also think about this with Golden State. Understandably, and this is to a degree an ascription of certain attributes onto a person that I think people don't know, but we've operated on the assumption, and I don't think it's unfair to say, that after Nico Harrison basically said, somebody take this loser off our hands and traded Luka Doncic, again, not me saying he's a loser, but Nico definitely said he was a loser. It was a fair assumption to make from a bunch of people that now Luka's going to be incredibly motivated. He's going to grind in a whole nother way based on, you know, da-da-da, XYZ, everything else. Right. Fair, right? We'd agree?
Yeah.
I don't really know why we don't... We're not leaning harder on that with Jimmy Butler, a person we've actually seen do the thing in a way that we haven't seen Luka do the thing, right? And that's not to say, I mean, clearly, neither of them has gotten past the NBA Finals. They've both gotten to the NBA Finals. However, we're going to see if Luka got that in him. I know that Jimmy's got that in him. I know it. And you're adding that to one of the greatest players of all time and an organization that one would assume would at the very least had like institutional memory of how to get it done. Ooh, this is interesting.
I think, look, every year I wind up planning at the Western Conference playoffs. And this year, before the season started, I was like, hey, y'all, can I hang out in the East this year? Because I think the East is going to be a lot more compelling. I feel like I need to relitigate that again because I feel like the West is going to be insane once again. I feel like the West is not going to be at all predictable, Bo.
No, look, the West play-in, which, by the way, for the first time in a while, will not involve the Los Angeles Lakers.
The LeBron Invitational.
Yes, but it's going to be really, I mean, it's going to be a fascinating single elimination-ish tournament because it's not exactly single elimination. But like I said right now, it'd be Minnesota, Dallas, Golden State, and the Kings in it. It is entirely possible that we could switch one of those teams out and put the Clippers in. It is also entirely possible the Kings could drop out and we could put the Suns in there. Like, you're going to have some real star power in the West play in this go round, and then some teams that don't necessarily want to see what's on the other side. I'd love to play against Phoenix. That's different. If I'm one of those teams, if you worried about Phoenix, man, you in the wrong line of everything.
Yeah. Cause that, I think we can all agree this is the last hurrah, whatever that iteration is.
what period. Is like, look,
I've seen people make the argument that the Kawhi Leonard, Paul George era of the Clippers was this giant failure. And it's, I get where you're coming from. I think there was a measure of bad luck, though, with Kawhi's injury history. Is it really luck when it happens? I get you. However, what Phoenix has done in the end, I think may prove to be way more catastrophic. They traded all that for Kevin Durant, and they was ready to... Why would you trade Kevin Durant to get Jimmy Butler? And you just heard how I feel about Jimmy. That was ridiculous. They were going to do that. Like, they, like, you want to look at an organization that to me looks like is going to go about the business of destroying itself? That one.
Yep. And the Kevin Durant free agency has already begun. Because
yeah, he ain't
once you told Kevin Durant that you were going to trade him, Kevin Durant ain't coming back to your town.
Hold on. And you didn't tell him until late.
Yeah.
Like, y'all weren't in on this together. And the time he wants to stay.
The time he wants to stay.
Right? It's not going so well. He tried to stay out here and battle it out with y'all. Like, this to me, this tells me everything. Ishbia, the owner of the Suns, apparently was so fixated on getting Jimmy Butler and figured he could get him with Brad Beal involved. And Brad and the league were like, nah. But he figured that he could get it done with Brad Beal involved, and then he couldn't. And I felt like he just got so fixated on Jimmy that he was like, fine, then I'll trade Kevin Durant. What? Like, after you trade Kevin Durant, you're going to need to go trade for Kevin Durant.
Right. These new owners come in, and you see it every time. No matter what it is, they come in, and they have their own ideology. They want to make a splash. They sacrifice everything, and then it blows up in their face.
And he's a guy that thinks he's a basketball player.
Yeah, that's something. That's something. We're going to pause for a minute, then we'll be right back with the last word. It's time for the last word here with Bo Monty Jones. Bo, we can go two topics. I'm going to give you a chance to pick your poison. Greg Popovich is not coaching for the rest of the season, unlikely to coach for the last part of this season. Or we could talk about Joel Embiid having to go under the knife one more again. Which one you want?
Oh, we could do both because the Popovich one is quick. Wishing you the best. Wishing you the best, brother. There's, take care of yourself.
Whatever I don't see why he would even want to come back. Want to come back, but why?
Well, the why is that next year, I don't think this blood clot is that big a deal.
Okay. From Victor Wembanyama, yeah.
Yeah, for what people are talking about, for what people are saying who know better, this is not Chris Bosh.
Right, yeah.
The issue with a blood clot is if you have to stay on blood thinners, you can't play.
Right.
Because you can't take the risk of getting hit and bleeding out. Like, right. that's what it is. If this is something that a run of blood thinners is going to take care of and then it's gone, then, all right, that's not the issue. And so, yes, if you're Pop, the most futuristic player we have ever seen, yeah, that's why you want to come back. But this Embiid thing is way, 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 way more interesting. Because right now, it doesn't sound like it's a terrible knee injury, but it's a problematic knee injury. And they're trying to go about solving it without having to have a surgery. That doesn't seem to be working. Is this what it's going to be from here on out? That he's always going to be around dragging that leg a little bit? Because, man, this year, I've never heard of a team be as bad / disappointing as this team and not really hearing nothing about nobody getting fired.
Who gonna get fired? Daryl gonna fire himself?
I mean, in theory, you fire Nurse.
If you fire Nurse, all these leaflets from the sky will be coming down. All the leaflets from the sky. Everything that you think went wrong, he gonna tell it.
Our good friend, the unnamed source. It's gonna be what's his name? The source close to the situation.
Source close to the sitch.
He's going to be showing up. I mean, look, it looks like they might get to keep that pick.
Yeah. Was it top 7 protected from Oklahoma City or something like that?
Top 6, I think. I think it's top 6.
They might have to.
Yeah.
Look, Paul George looks cooked and looks like he wants to be cooked, right? Joel Embiid, the last time I saw someone with a full leg brace and was still playing was the last good year of Blake Griffin. And I mean legit. The last
I thought you were
going to
say like J.J. Watt.
Yeah. That brace, bro, that brace was from his calf all the way to the top of the thing. You know what I'm saying? Yes. Like, it's not how this is supposed to work. And the fact that Embiid is still trying to play, my thing is, whether it's surgical or non-surgical, he don't need to be playing.
No, but he, if somebody's got to shut him down, the team has to do it.
Right.
He, in that city, has to drag that leg no matter what, because he got to a place where people questioning his toughness. And I yes. get where he's coming from in regard of, wait a minute, tell me when I have not tried, right? Tell me when I may not have been able to, but tell me when I have not tried, right? Totally get where he's coming from. But what they're doing only works with him as a superstar. Like, Tyrese Maxey can be a very good player, but Tyrese Maxey cannot be the best player on right. your team, right? Right. They need, this is just me, looking at the pieces they have, and let's put Paul George to the side just for a second. And high-level Tyrese Maxey, and I mean high-level as in the highest level of what Tyrese Maxey can do, okay?
Right.
So a superstar tier Embiid, a top-notch Tyrese Maxey. Yeah, if you could turn that into something while getting some contribution for Paul George, who, by the way, this is a mistake I think all of us make about this league these days. Paul George is in his 15th year in the NBA. We act like these guys aren't old, like old isn't a thing in the NBA. James Harden is in his 16th year in the NBA, for example. Mm-hmm. Kawhi Leonard is in his 14th year mm-hmm. in the NBA. These dudes are old. Steph Curry is in his 16th year in the NBA. DeMar DeRozan is 16th year in the NBA. These dudes are old, man. Yep. And we can't just keep assuming they all going to show up. Joel Embiid, year 11.
Big dog. These dudes get old. We ain't the only ones getting old. Like, don't let LeBron fool you, because at some point, the bill going to come for that. Now, yes. very, very last thing. Super quick. Greg Popovich, greatest coach of all time or no?
I believe that he has a very strong argument. I think that you can argue that perhaps he has the strongest resume. And yes, I know Phil Jackson has what? 10? 11?
Yes.
10.
No, he has 11. Six with the Bulls, 5 with the Lakers.
Yes. Red Auerbach has what? 9?
Yes.
Popovich has 5. Yes, that is different. It is the way that he did it that makes it very interesting. But is he a better coach than his mentor, Larry Brown?
Great question.
Right? Like, Larry Brown's the one that throws everything off, because you can put up whoever's resume in front of me if you want to. That's fine. We got to win this one game. Oh, okay. Like, take it to college. Rick Pitino has 2 national championships.
Mm-hmm.
You tell me who's better at coaching a basketball team in college than Rick Pitino.
Yeah, I can't think of anybody.
Yeah, you see what I'm saying? And so Pop is up there, absolutely up there. And look at those championships he won. Like, he won them on Shaq's watch. He won mm-hmm. them on LeBron's watch. Mm-hmm. And look, yes, he had Tim Duncan, but that's not...
He ain't just won them on a watch. The beat, blood on his banners. I got yes. your blood on my yes. banner.
He does.
Blood.
He absolutely does.
I closed out the forum, y'all. I closed out the forum with Tim Duncan, dog.
That was a sweep, right?
Yes.
He closed out the forum with Tim Duncan in game 4 in 99, and it was a ugly one, too.
That game came up on my YouTube the other day, and brother, let me tell you, I wound up just sitting there and watching it, because I'm, like, morbid like that. And yeah. Tim, brother, we don't give Tim Duncan the thrift that he deserves, because he put them boys to work.
And he might not have even been the best player on that team.
Oh, no, he was. No, he was.
You think he was better than Dave at that point?
Yeah. It's you know it when you see it. It's just one gotcha. Of the things. You know it when you see it. You're not, like, the difference between Tim Duncan and Anthony Davis, and maybe we'll talk about this another day. You weren't moving Tim. Once Tim planted that base, yeah,
he's a bigger
you
dude.
Ain't moving him.
Yeah, no, he was a much bigger man.
Yes. No, man, we can put a pin in that, because one day we're going to have a conversation about how Tim Duncan don't get the respect that he deserves. And maybe that's because he played for Greg Popovich in San Antonio, but whatever. But that is my man, Bomani Jones. Thanks, Bomani, for joining us, man. Don't forget, y'all, to check out The Right Time. You got something else going on with The Right Time, too, if you want to plug that.
Yeah, no, we're doing ad-free, man. We got a subscription tier now, $5 a month with Supercast. You can get ad-free episodes at The Right Time. And on top of that, we do AMAs and give you a few other special features, right? I've never asked people to pay any money for any of the stuff that I do, and so we got to make it worth it for you.
That, go ahead and check that out. Thanks to producer Dakota and the entire team that works hard behind the scenes on this show. I'll be back later in the week with Dan Titus. And until then, everybody be safe.